condemns Israel's recent attack on its embassy in Syria, calling the regime's irresponsible actions a real threat to regional peace. And Iraq's Islamic Resistance carries out more operations in support of Gaza, hitting 5 Israeli targets in occupied territories, including an oil port and an air base. Palestinians are witnessing an endless spiral of death and devastation in Gaza, where the U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide is now in its 7th month. Israeli aircraft and artillery continue pounding various parts of Gaza, targeting homes and gatherings of displaced people and killing over 30 in the past 24 hours. Mayor of Al-Maghazi refugee camp and several others were killed when the regime hit that camp in central Gaza. And to the south, the horrors continue after Israeli occupation forces leave the city of Khan Yunis on Sunday. So far, 84 bodies have been recovered from out under the rubble. A Palestinian medical source says the regime has also significantly damaged city's hospital. Now, since the start of a U.S.-Israeli onslaught on Gaza on October 7th, over 33,200 people have been killed, and nearly 2 million out of Gaza's 2.5 million population have been internally displaced. Iran's ambassador to the UN says Israeli crimes are a real threat to regional and international peace and security. Amir Saeed Erivani slammed as a disgrace and flagrant violation of the UN Charter Israel's recent terrorist attack on Iran's Damascus embassy. In a statement at the UN General Assembly, he expressed regret that the Security Council failed to condemn the attack. Erivani said Israel is committing such violations with impunity, and this is a challenge to the legitimacy of international law. Elsewhere, he pointed to U.S. role in this campaign of genocide, saying atrocities could never have happened without Washington's full support. He said U.S. has been playing what he called a hypocritical game of pressure and blackmail by frequently vetoing Security Council resolutions calling for Gaza ceasefire. Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement says Iran has every right to respond to recent Israeli attack on its embassy in Syria.
In the end, the Americans have come to the conclusion that there will be a reaction. Even the Israelis, they have come to this conclusion. They have recognized that there will be, I think the whole world has, that this is a natural right for Iran and that it's normal for the Islamic Republic to go ahead with such a retaliation. But of course, everyone's waiting what will happen and the repercussions of what will happen.
Said Hassan Nasrallah made the comments in a ceremony held in commemoration of Iranian Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zayedi, who was killed along with a number of his companions in Damascus. Hezbollah chief said Israel's stupidity in attacking the Iranian embassy made the U.S. president press the Tel Aviv to stop its Gaza onslaught. Nasrallah said Israel's achieved nothing on the ground in Gaza in the past 6 months and has no choice but to stop its genocidal campaign. Nasrallah also cited Israel's deteriorating situation in the world and its isolation due to its aggression against the Palestinians. Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has paid a visit to the Syrian capital as part of a regional tour. The Iranian diplomat has met with high-ranking officials, including the Syrian president and foreign minister, and we discussed the significance of his trip with our guests earlier in our news review program.
It's time for the news review. Well, the Iranian foreign minister has met with high-ranking Syrian officials in Damascus on the second leg of his regional tour. In a presser with his Syrian counterpart, Faisal Mehrdad, the Iranian minister said Tehran's response to the Israeli terrorist attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus is definite. He held the United States responsible for the assault, saying Washington's refusal to condemn the terrorist act proves its complicity. Touching upon the Israeli crimes in Gaza, the Iranian minister said the unfolding developments in the war-ridden strip are indicative of a profound confusion and division within the Israeli regime. He reiterated that his country will continue all-out efforts to put an end to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Amir Abdullahian is in Damascus as part of his regional tour. He has also met with the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. During the visit, the Iranian diplomat also inaugurated a new consular section for the Iranian embassy. I'd like to welcome to this news review our guest, Gisu Misha Ahmadi, who is in Damascus, and Shabir Rezvi, political analyst out of London. Well, thank you both for being with us. Let me start it off with Gisu. Gisu, will fill us in on this tour in general and what has taken place.
This was a very important regional tour and a very important visit by the foreign minister to Damascus at this point in time. And Marzia, I would like to draw our viewers' attention to the fact that the timing of this visit is very important, and in and of itself it sends a very strong message to those who attacked the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. In the words of Mr. Amir Abdullahian himself, because he considers the United States responsible for that, without the logistics information that the Americans would provide the Israelis, this attack would not have been possible, and particularly with the go-ahead of the U.S., this without that, it would not have been possible. So, Marzia, this sends a very strong message that Iran is adamant in keeping its stance, its position in supporting the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian people, its stance regarding a strong demand for a ceasefire in Gaza, and of course for the rights of the Palestinian people to be recognized on an international scale. Now, what's even more important makes it very significant, Marzia, because I have traveled with the foreign minister many, many times. On this trip, his family is also accompanying. So that is also another sign that Iran is not afraid, and it is taking the same stance that it's always had regarding being an advocate for the Palestinian cause and, of course, the axis of resistance.
Okay. Well, Shabir, your thoughts, you heard our correspondent there and talking about the significance of this tour. I also want to reiterate what the Iranian foreign minister, Amir Abdullahian, talked about when he not only said the Israeli regime will pay for what it has done, but he also talked about the United States and its complicity, and basically saying that they will have to pay a price too. Your understanding of what all of this means?
Thanks very much for the invitation. Look, at the end of the day, all crimes that are committed on this planet are really at the behest of the United States of America. USA has fought wars, invaded countries, assassinated leaders since the Second World War virtually every year. This is all recorded history. And we can see that we are 6 months into the genocide taking place in Gaza. If America did not want that to happen, it would not have happened. They have, on the one hand, they talk about humanitarian aid, providing more sustenance to the people in the besieged territory, but at the same time, continue to supply armaments. So it's, as I've commented previously, these are all weasel words that USA uses to hoodwink the world into thinking that they're trying to do good. So coming back to the issue of the bombing of the consulate in Damascus, of course, a nod and a wink may have been given by Washington. There's no doubt at all. Otherwise, the Zionist entity wouldn't have the audacity to bomb an embassy. And it's the first time this has happened in history that a nation has bombed an embassy, a sovereign part of a country in a third country. It's quite unique that the red lines that the Zionist entity has continued to cross without any repercussions. And that, I think, is because what USA does is gives its complete support without really any kind of reprimand. One hears that, yes, words, they're going to do this, X, Y, Z. But the easy task is, tomorrow, if USA decides not to send any armaments and any money to the Zionist entity, the whole sort of arrogance of the Zionist politicians and the 98% of the public who are with this so-called right-wing government in Israel would really have to change their mind dramatically.
Okay, now, and on that note, sorry to interrupt you, but I have to go. I appreciate both of you being with me on this news review, Gisu Ahmadi in Damascus and Shabir Rezvi, political analyst out of London.
A Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, says latest Israeli proposal during Gaza ceasefire talks does not meet the movement's and Palestinians' demands. Hamas says Israel's position in latest round of negotiations in the Egyptian capital, Cairo, remains stubborn. The movement, however, said it is still studying the proposal and will inform mediators of its response once it's completely reviewed. Now, Hamas did not set any time frame for its response, but the movement says it wants a comprehensive ceasefire that will see the withdrawal of all Israeli forces from Gaza and the return of Gazans back to their homes. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is also one of the main subjects of the talks. The Cairo talks are attended by delegations from Israel, Hamas, Qatar, and the United States. Iraqi resistance group says they've carried out fresh military operations against five vital Israeli targets in retaliation for the regime's massacres in Palestinians in Gaza. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it targets hit included Ashkelon oil port and the Hatzairim air base in the city of Beersheba. The umbrella resistance group also vowed to continue targeting enemy strongholds. In recent months, the group also carried out a series of attacks against Israeli targets and also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in retaliation for Washington's complicity in Israel's campaign of genocide. The Palestinian envoy to the UN, Riyad Mansour, has hailed the Security Council for referring Palestinian full membership application to the Admissions Committee.
We sincerely hope, after 12 years since we changed our status to an observer state, that the Security Council will elevate itself to implementing the global consensus on the two-state solution by admitting the State of Palestine for full membership.
Referral was made by Malta, the current president of the UN Security Council. Malta's UN ambassador, Vanessa Fraser, says a 15-member committee is expected to make a decision about Palestine's status this month. The Russian envoy to the UN, Dmitry Polyansky, also expressed backing for this request. He called on all UN member states to support Palestine's bid for full membership in the UN. Polls from throughout the West continue to show Israel's atrocities in Gaza have had an unprecedented impact. The French President Emmanuel Macron continues to give unconditional support to Tel Aviv, but opinion out on the French streets has shifted towards Palestine since October 7th. Rami Mazahiri has your story out of Paris.
Highly politicized French polling agencies have rarely dared to make surveys on Palestine, but after 6 months of attempted genocide, a new poll shows public opinion dramatically shifting against Israel. Since October, support for Israel's plan to eliminate Hamas has dropped from 65 to 56%, while condemnation for Israel's war aim has jumped from 35 to 44%. Following the mainstreaming of Islamophobia, France had become an ardently pro-Zionist country. But the polls show that a nation evenly split on support for Palestine isn't far away.
Here in France, we have many stars and actors who are Arabs and Muslims, but who don't say a word about Palestine and who don't support the Palestinian cause openly. It's a shame because they could have a big impact on the French public. Instead, they shut themselves up.
Israel est illégitime.
Israel is illegitimate and has no right to exist. Palestine is unjustly occupied, and I don't see how anyone can fail to see that. I'm waiting for Iran and Hezbollah to do their work and for Israel to get out.
As Palestinians return to the city of Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city, the results of 6 months of war are catastrophic. Israel has killed over 33,000 people and wounded 80,000 others in Gaza, the West Bank, and Lebanon. Famine is affecting half of Gaza's 2.2 million people, while some two-thirds of the nation's buildings have been reduced to rubble.
Vraiment, il faut que cette guerre-là, elle cesse.
This war really has to stop. People are forgetting that the Palestinians are humans, just like everyone else. There are just horrible things going on for women and children, and there has to be peace immediately.
After 6 months, the United Nations Human Rights Council finally took a position on the horrific invasion. They called for a halt in all arms sales to Israel and for Israel to be held accountable for possible war crimes and crimes against humanity. Many attribute the Western public's shift against Israel not to the mainstream media or brave politicians, but to the gruesome and heartbreaking images being relayed on social and alternative media. Images of the human costs of the West's support for Tel Aviv have long been censored. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you, early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
Despite three Britons being slaughtered by the Zionist regime military, the UK continues to aid Israel through trade and arms sales. In this regard, we have Despite three Britons being slaughtered by the Zionist regime military, the UK continues to aid Israel through trade and arms sales. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote on Monday, April 1st, the world's eyes were opened to the Israeli occupation's sinister attack on humanitarian aid after seven aid workers were killed by an Israeli regime airstrike upon returning from coordinating the delivery of 100 tons of food in central Gaza. The World Central Kitchen, WCK, said its convoy was hit despite coordinating its movements with the Israeli regime military, and that two of the cars hit were clearly marked as aid vehicles. Three of those killed, James Henderson, 33, John Chapman, 57, and James Kirby, 47, were British veterans of the UK Armed Forces and working as part of WCK's security team. If the Zionist regime's tactic to weaponize aid and deliberately attempt to starve Gaza was not sufficiently clear, it is now. And this was by no means as an isolated incident. James McGoldrick, the UN's aid coordinator for the occupied Palestinian territory, has described Gaza as one of the most dangerous places on earth for humanitarian workers. He said, as of March 2020, at least 196 humanitarians had been killed in the occupied Palestinian territory since October 2023. This is nearly three times the death toll recorded in any single conflict in a year. The occupation has a history of killing aid workers. The tragedy of the Mavi Marmara is still vivid in the minds of human aid and advocacy workers, who were among hundreds of humanitarians from 50 different countries working to deliver a flotilla of 10,000 tons of aid into the besieged Gaza Strip in May 2010. On that devastating night, 10 aid workers were killed and hundreds injured by Israeli regime forces who attacked by land, air and sea, shooting people on sight. Today, the illegal Israeli occupation has created famine-like conditions, says the humanitarian group Refugees International. Its research on the ground also found that the occupation consistently and groundlessly impeded aid operations within Gaza, blocked legitimate relief operations, and resisted implementing measures that would genuinely enhance the flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. Moreover, Gaza's health ministry has stated that 27 children and 3 adults had so far died from malnutrition, and this estimate was expected to increase imminently. This intimidation of aid workers puts NGOs in a difficult position as to whether to risk their workers or pull out completely, as we saw with WCK, which has now halted operations in Gaza. Moreover, the frequent disruptions in trying to deliver emergency aid indicate that Israel is implementing starvation as a tactic of war. The UN's most senior human rights official, Volker Turk, stated that there was a plausible case that Israel was using starvation as a weapon of war in Gaza. Despite 3 British citizens being indiscriminately murdered by the Zionist regime military, the UK continues to aid Israel through trade and arms sales. The UK's unwavering allyship to the Israeli occupation has enabled a genocide to unfold, as well as aiding and abetting the deaths of its own citizens. Human aid and advocacy has launched the hashtag #NoToGenocide campaign to draw attention to how the occupation is using starvation as a weapon of war and to demand that the UK government end its complicity through cutting trade and arms sales to Israel. A ceasefire and short-term aid is not enough. We must put in place sanctions and an embargo. Meanwhile, Palestine Chronicle wrote, Scotland's First Minister Hamza Yousaf has reiterated his appeal to the UK government to suspend arms sales to Israel, this time following the killings of 7 aid workers in an Israeli regime airstrike. Yousaf said in a letter addressed to British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak recently, the civilian death toll is intolerable, as is the killing of humanitarian workers who deliver vital aid to Palestinians facing starvation and violence at the hands of this Israeli government. By not stopping arms sales to Israel, the UK is in danger of being complicit in the killing of innocent civilians. Yousaf highlighted that he first called for a ban on arms sales in a letter dated February 23rd to the UK government, given the risk of increasing bloodshed caused by Israel's threat to carry out a ground offensive into Rafah. The letter stated, I know that I have yet to receive a response, and you have taken no such action despite the death toll continuing to increase. He pointed out that the latest tragedy, which saw 3 British aid workers killed amongst others by an Israeli airstrike on a World Central Kitchen convoy, has caused global outrage. He said, I note your public statement calling for an immediate investigation. However, over 190 humanitarian workers have died in Gaza since the beginning of the conflict. with no end in sight, no accountability, and little or no sign of Israel paying heed to the International Court of Justice ruling or the recent United Nations Security Council resolution. Yusuf added, in spite of this, the UK government continued to allow British-based companies to arm Israel, despite the fact that Israel has killed children, women, aid workers, and bombed hospitals, schools, and refugee camps. He said that although he has repeatedly said that Israel has the right to defend itself, he believes, however, that Israel's actions have long since gone beyond a legitimate response. Yusuf stressed, enough is enough. The Israeli government must be held to account. The Zionist regime has admitted to the killings of the World Central Kitchen, WCK, aid workers, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu calling it a tragic event in which forces unintentionally harmed non-combatants, and adding that this happens in the war. The WCK called the tragedy a military attack that involved multiple strikes and targeted three of the organization's vehicles. Despite coordinating the movements with the Israeli regime military, WCK said the convoy was hit as it was leaving the Deir al-Balah warehouse in central Gaza, where the team had unloaded more than 100 tons of humanitarian food aid brought to Gaza on the maritime route. The NGO said all three vehicles were carrying civilians. They were marked as WCK vehicles, and their movements were in full compliance with Israeli authorities, who were aware of their routes and humanitarian mission. Currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for Genocide Against Palestinians, the Zionist regime has been waging a devastating war on Gaza since October 7th. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 33,037 Palestinians have been murdered and 75,668 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in the enclave. Moreover, at least 7,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say that the majority of those murdered and wounded are women and children. The Israeli regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948's Nakba.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the holy month of Ramadan has taught us resistance. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we are quickly coming to a close and an end of the holy month of Ramadan. It's interesting, we find in the du'as and in Sahifa Sajjadiyya, in these statements of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, the fourth divinely appointed Imam, that the holy month of Ramadan was like this blessed and very honorable and holy and divine companion that we had. And so even though we are happy that we were able to worship Allah and obey Allah at least the best that we could, and this makes us happy. But on the other hand, because we are losing this divine companion, this divine friend who had accompanied us for, 29 or 30 days, we are losing this friend, and this friend is leaving us, and this makes us sad. And these are the words of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. The holy month of Ramadan is coming to an end, unfortunately, and we should feel some level of anxiety, and in a positive sense, of course, this kind of dread or this worry that we were so easily forgiven for our sins in this holy month of Ramadan. The acts of worship that we did in this holy month, they were multiplied so many times fold. The recitation of the Quran, it was like, as the traditions say, reciting one verse of the holy Quran in this holy month of Ramadan is like reciting the whole Quran in the other months. Our fasting was accepted, there's so many things that we will lose, and that does cause a little bit of worry, a little bit of sadness. The holy month of Ramadan, what we wanted to talk about is this idea of resistance. Through the fasting from the morning until the night and the controlling of one's various different desires and passions and controlling of the self, all of this in reality is teaching us resistance.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about how the holy month of Ramadan teaches us resistance. And we had left off the last segment. We were talking about how, we were fasting from morning until night. We stopped ourselves and refrained and controlled ourselves from, basic human instincts, if you will, which is to eat and to drink. At the same time, we also, controlled ourselves, our different desires, our passions. We did our best to control the various different faculties that we have and use them for the cause of Allah and in order to strengthen Islam as best as we could, of course. All of these things, they teach us resistance. Now, this resistance, of course, is something that gives strength to a human being. With all the different difficulties that we face in, our modern present-day life is full of difficulties, hardships, stress, anxiety, tension, look at the statistics of how many people die from heart attacks or they die from hypertension. So, this is the kind of life that we are living in. And of course, it just seems like that the means and the facilities to be able to sin have just increased beyond imagination. And so in this kind of a suffocating environment, right, first and foremost, we pray that Allah hasten the reappearance of the Imam of the time. But in such kind of suffocating environment, it's really necessary for us to be able to have this power of resistance. And this is what the holy month of Ramadan has taught us, this power of resistance, so that, of course, through our daily life, we are able to resist all the different things that we are faced with, that we are powerful and steadfast, and ultimately so that we can reach our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Starvation is getting worse in North Gaza, where 31% of children under the age of 2 are suffering from acute malnutrition, a percentage which has doubled since January. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, approximately 300,000 people remain trapped in northern Gaza facing heightened susceptibility to disease due to severe hunger. Residents in northern Gaza are barely surviving on an average of 245 calories per day, according to a statement released by the international NGO Oxfam. This intake represents less than 12% of an adult's daily caloric needs and don't consider access to proper nutrition, according to the statement. The scarcity of fruits and vegetables, coupled with extreme price hikes, has made them unattainable for most. Additionally, specialized nutrition products and malnutrition treatment centers are scarce or inaccessible, Oxfam noted. Before the war, we were in good health and had strong bodies. Now, looking at my children and myself, we have lost so much weight since we do not eat any proper food. We are trying to eat whatever we find, edible wild plants or herbs daily just to survive, a mother trapped in northern Gaza told Oxfam. Approximately 300,000 people remain trapped in the area facing heightened susceptibility to disease due to severe hunger. The situation is compounded by the Zionist regime's extensive destruction of civilian infrastructure, including hospitals and water and sanitation services in Gaza. Oxfam International Executive Director Amitabh Bahar said, "Israel is making deliberate choices to starve civilians. Imagine what it is like, not only to be trying to survive on 245 calories day in, day out, but also having to watch your children or elderly relatives do the same, all while displaced with little to no access to clean water or a toilet, knowing most medical support has gone and under the constant threat of drones and bombs." Oxfam's analysis of the latest Integrated Food Security Phase Classification IPC data for the Gaza Strip reveals alarming figures. Since last October, total food deliveries to the entire population of Gaza, approximately 2.2 million people, have only provided 41% of the daily calories needed per person. The IPC findings underscored the imminent threat of famine in northern Gaza, with nearly the entire population experiencing extreme hunger. Shockingly, 1.1 million people are now facing catastrophic food insecurity. These statistics paint a bleak picture of the humanitarian crisis unfolding in Gaza, highlighting the urgent need for immediate and substantial intervention to address food shortages and prevent widespread starvation. Bahar said, Israel is ignoring both the International Court of Justice order to prevent genocide and UN Security Council resolutions. Only last week, the ICJ ordered new provisional measures stating famine is no longer looming but setting in Gaza, adding that the international community must stop arming Israel and impose an immediate ceasefire. According to the Oxfam official, only then we can stop this horrifying carnage for the 2.2 million people who have endured 6 months of suffering. Israel cannot weaponize starvation any longer. Currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for Genocide Against Palestinians, the Zionist regime has been waging a devastating war on Gaza. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 33,037 Palestinians have been murdered and at least 75,668 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting on October 7th. Moreover, at least 7,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say the majority of those killed and wounded are women and children. The Israeli regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Meanwhile, a new report by the Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor reveals the killing of 563 Palestinians and the injury of 1,523 others due to the Zionist regime's targeting of people waiting for aid. Distribution centers and workers responsible for organizing, protecting, and distributing aid released recently the report titled Killing Starving Palestinians and Targeting Aid Trucks, a deliberate Israeli policy to reinforce famine in the Gaza Strip, documents incidents between January 11th and March 23, 2024. During that period, Euromed Monitor documented that 256 people were killed in the Kuwait roundabout area in the southeast of Gaza City, 230 on Al-Rashid Street in the southwest of the city, and 21 due to the targeting of aid distribution centers. Documentation also shows that 41 police officers and People's Protection Committee members who were in charge of overseeing aid distribution were killed, along with 12 aid distribution workers, two of whom were from the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA. Evidence suggests that Israel intentionally perpetrates these crimes, including direct military attacks on humanitarian aid and civilians, as part of a deliberate and overarching policy, the reporter stated, adding, "This is evident from the systematic pattern and regular, almost daily recurrence of Israel's commission of these crimes, as well as the high number of victims affected by them." Euromed Monitor said one of the most dangerous forms of unlawful killings and executions carried out by the Israeli army against Palestinian civilians recently is the systematic targeting of civilian gatherings around humanitarian aid trucks with direct gunfire, quadcopters, and Israeli tank shells, especially on the Kuwait and Nablusi roundabouts in the south of Gaza City, which have been dubbed the Flower Massacres. The report lists the various incidents of starving civilians waiting for humanitarian aid being targeted by Israeli forces as follows. On March 23, 2024, 30 Palestinians were murdered and 80 others injured after the Israeli regime army opened fire at those waiting for aid trucks near the Kuwait roundabout on Salahuddin Road south of Gaza City. On March 14, 2024, Israeli regime army forces opened heavy fire on thousands of civilians who had gathered near the Kuwait roundabout on Salahuddin Road in southern Gaza City using tanks, helicopters and drones. The shooting left more than 80 dead and 200 injured, with a number of them left in critical condition. The next morning, the Zionist regime army forces opened fire on residents who returned to the scene in an attempt to retrieve the bodies of the victims. Many of the bodies had been left underground overnight as Israeli gunfire had made it difficult for them to be transferred. And on March 13th, 6 Palestinians were murdered and others injured while waiting for aid supplies to arrive at the Kuwait roundabout on the outskirts of Gaza City.
Clean energy. I have been invited to retell the story of a great effort, an effort in which Iran's peaceful nuclear program is being continued with dynamics at the hands of the country's mighty nuclear scientists. We'd only be unable to go there if it's closed down, under renovation or reinforcement. If any of these are underway, it would mean a wasted journey. I, Bijan Afshar, am with you from the beautiful nature surrounding the Bushehr nuclear power plant. Nowadays, nuclear energy is known as one of the environmental approaches to confront global warming and reduce environmental pollution. Therefore, nuclear energy is categorized among energies that are clean and environmentally friendly. The formation of nuclear energy has been based on studies in physics and chemistry in recent centuries. In 1879, Crookes took the first step by ionizing a gas through electrical draining. Then, in 1897, Thomson introduced the electron as a charged particle responsible for electricity. In early 1942, scientists proposed a plan to build the first nuclear reactor. Nowadays, over 440 nuclear reactors in 31 countries produce nearly 30% of the electricity used across the world. For us humans, air is the most important natural element along with water, food, light and warmth. You know, in order to survive, we inhale 22,000 times a day and need about 15 kilograms of air. We can survive without food for about 5 weeks and live without water for 5 days. But without air, we can't even survive for 5 minutes. Climate change is one of the most important challenges of the current century. Global warming, ice caps melting, the sea and ocean level rise, and the exacerbation of greenhouse gas effects are the outcomes of climate change, which can have a significant destructive effect on agriculture, forests, ecosystems, and the health and safety of society. Any type of pollutant, including solid, liquid, or gas in the air surrounding us, that endangers the life quality of human beings and other creatures or causes damage to historical buildings and monuments, is considered air pollution. Air pollution can have short-term and long-term effects on human health. The side effects of air pollution differ from person to person. Some people, like children and the elderly, are more vulnerable. The damages usually depend on the exposure length and the density of the pollutants. Unfortunately, the pulmonary injuries caused by air pollution endanger 3 in 5 people. The increase in greenhouse gases and acid rainfalls, which lead to the destruction of green spaces, different animal and plant species, and a rise in the Earth's temperature, is another effect of the use of fossil fuels by cars, industries, and thermal power plants. It would be good to know that over 2 tons of greenhouse gases are added to the environment to provide the electricity required to run a refrigerator throughout a year using fossil fuel. This place is the Pars Port Complex, which is located in the eastern part of Bushehr province, along with the Persian Gulf, where the country's energy in the field of oil, gas, and petrochemicals is produced. This strategic region includes 24 refinery phases. Energy is the most important factor in life nowadays, which has also been named the essence of life. Energy has had a very key impact on the production of all goods, especially after the Industrial Revolution. Energy is currently considered a political, economic, and strategic tool, and the security of all countries depends on safe access to it. Drilling technology is considered one of the most important sections in the oil and gas industry, and one of the most specialized industrial activities in the world regarding exploration. Sand drilling has environmental effects as it causes water, air, land, and sound pollution and creates vibrations in the areas surrounding the drilling. The oil and gas resources in our country can be turned into derivative with much higher added value instead of being burnt in power plants, industries, and vehicles. Another issue that preoccupied my mind is the future of energy for these kids who are playing around without knowing anything about our concerns. We should make sure their future is energy secure by properly using our current energy resources and providing them with sources of clean energy. Many oil vessels are transporting the crude extracts. Although it's winter, the weather around here is very pleasant and feels like spring and is very clean. Here has its own sort of pollution too. Believe me, I'm very upset to have to leave Asaluye and return to Tehran. That's packed with smoke and dust. Honestly, if fossil fuels are used properly, I think most polluted cities would become pollution-free. I've come to the oil refinery in Tehran from the Pars Port complex in Asaluye. As you know, after crude is extracted at the refinery, it is turned into other oil derivatives, such as various fuels for different kinds of use. This conversion has its own specific conditions. Watching massive fuel production plants amazes you. The amount of investment made for producing fuels that are extensively burned not only pollute the environment and act as health hazards, they also waste natural resources and lead to massive fund losses for our country. After visiting the production pipeline of mazut fuel oil that's used in thermal power plants that generate electricity, I went to the restaurant at the Tehran refinery together with Mr. Alijani, who is the head of the operations department, to dine with the hard-working workers there. The fast pace of technological advances has led to the world's increasing demand for electricity. For this reason, the number of power-generating plants is increasing around the world on a daily basis. Most of these power plants, which are thermal power plants, usually burn fossil fuels to provide the mechanical power required to move their generators. This also causes a lot of pollution. Everything gets disrupted as easy as that. Nowadays, energy is the essence of life, which is provided by using various kinds of resources found in nature. One type of energy that plays a key role in human life is electrical energy or electricity. Nowadays, due to the destructive effects of greenhouse gases, nuclear energy is considered one of the appropriate environmental solutions to confront global warming. Based on available statistics, operational nuclear plants around the world have currently reduced 8% of the carbon dioxide in the air. The only remains of nuclear technology are wastes, which are collected, characterized, optimized, and prepared to be buried and kept in the Konarak desert region for a long period of time to reduce its radiation effects. According to this, nuclear energy is considered a new and renewable energy, which we are able to have the highest control over its contamination. Therefore, this sort of energy is called clean and environmental.